Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in, since they going back to showing action tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the anime action fan sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis. And I welcome you to episode 80 of The Prerogative. This week, as I may mention at the end of last episode, again, it's the holiday season, so obviously you know what we're covering all December. Anything winter related, anything Christmas related. I mean, what else would we be covering? I'm sure I'd be running out of town if I wasn't. And as I said, I decided, you know, to look in on a beloved, iconic franchise, and their 2009 take on the classic Christmas Carol. I am, of course, talking about Looney Tunes, and I am talking about Bah Humduck, A Looney Tunes Christmas. Like I said, it came out in 2009, and is the classic, iconic Looney Tune characters and their take on the classic Charles Dickens story, A Christmas Carol. Which, those who our fans of literature know that, of course, The Christmas Carol is only one part of a trilogy of sort of Christmas-themed novels from Charles Dickens. By the way, bit of a warning ahead of time. If I sound a little hoarse or don't sound right, well, you're hearing the reason why this episode is very late. In fact, going into this current week, as I'm recording this in the dead of night, and while you'll be getting two episodes this week, hopefully, I said, okay, well, this is what I'm going to do, this is what I'm going to do. It never happens. But I've been kind of under the weather very recently, so that's why the episode got delayed, among other things. But as you can hear, I'm only getting over it now. My throat is still a bit hoarse. I don't know how it's going to sound to you on the podcast. You would think I listen, and I do, but for the most part, again, peeling back the fourth wall, unless I do something completely screwed up, I just know where the brakes are and everything, and I pop it in. Especially when I'm this late with an episode. But I digress. We have no emails, no comments, or anything to talk about. We just get right into the show itself, and you know, before we get into the review and, of course, Bah Humduck, you know, I kind of want to talk about the Looney Tunes characters for a bit, because I think this is really the first time I'm really reviewing anything involving the Looney Tunes characters or the Warner Brother. I'm sure I've reviewed some Warner Brother properties that are cartoons and animation and things like that, but as far as the Looney Tunes franchise, I do believe this is the first time we are really discussing them. And, you know, I know people think that I, especially with the amount and review on this podcast because it is my first love and I do love talking about it, and I want to do a wide variety. And I do talk a lot about anime, and a lot of people think I love just the anime style. You know, something I actually have been happy about in the past couple of months is sort of the different varieties sort of animation I've been able to review, like the stop motion with a Madman Monster Party, among other things, you know, some, you know, the Machinima Technique with Red versus Blue. I know earlier in the year I did a CG movie. And the point there is, while I love anime, I do love all animation. And with cartoons, I don't think maybe review the cartoon style enough from my perspective. And I do. I love watching cartoons. You know, as much as I am an anime guy, I do enjoy the cartoon style. You know, obviously, I think A Pebble and the Penguin, despite it trying to copy the Disney formula, is a cartoon for a multitude of reasons. And, of course, that not being that I think it's too Broadway, by the way the sets are set up, the flat back, well, not flat backgrounds, they pop out. But, you know, it's a central location as opposed to sort of a more in-depth location, as I talked about in the Pebble and the Penguin review proper. But again, the whole cartoon style, as I sort of put it, it being like a play as opposed to anime being a movie, you know, you have the sort of the backgrounds that are sets, where it feels like you're watching something that's staged, as opposed to something that's immersive, that anime is. And even though I do love that immersiveness that anime has, I do love the play setup. I do love the skits and the bits. I'm a huge comedy man. And while I consider myself a Carlin guy, and I love Carlin, you know, I love D.L. Hughley, Dennis Miller, Bill Maher, Jeff Dunham, John Panette, just to name a few of my sort of top famers, at least at this moment, among many others, as of the great stand-ups that have been out in the past 20 years, I also consider myself a sort of classic type of comedy guy. I love Groucho Marx. You know, I love Laurel and Hardy. I love the Three Stooges. Though, if I had to admit, my personal favorite old-time comedy team will always be Abbott and Costello. I love Abbott and Costello. Who's On First is one of my favorite comedy bits of all time. And I bring that up because I do love that sort of comedy style and that old school type of comedy style, especially with Looney Tunes, that you get to see. And so it really is interesting to, you know, and I do hope to take more of a look at Looney Tunes later on down the line. At the same point, you know, doing this review also had some challenges because of that. You know, how do you discuss the design of an iconic character that hasn't changed for the most part since 1930s? You know, for the most part, Daffy's design has, well, changed not very much. It's more of the time period and how, really how animation has evolved and gotten bolder and more colorful and things like that. But the overall design you can still see. You can still see the design here of Daffy in the design of a Daffy Duck cartoon from the 40s and 30s and 50s and 60s. Same with Bugs. Same with Porky. You know, you see those design elements, the simple shapes and all that, in there. How do you, you know, talk about and review sort of the classic comedy that really hasn't changed for the most part, with the exception of a few series here or there, but it's mostly been there, again, since the 30s. 1930s, that is. It's really hard. So, you know, it's really taken me a while to decide, how do I want to review this movie as well? Because I think of those challenges. Because if I really just go into design, I'm going to be going back to the 30s and I really wasn't prepared to go that far into discussion about animation in regards to, A Looney Tunes Christmas. My humbug, that is. I really should have put that the other way around. Anyways, with those challenges pushed aside, we're going to sort of change the way certain aspects of the review are going to go down for the most part. But for the most part, it's going to be a fun review. I love the Looney Tunes. I could sit here and probably talk forever and ever about all the classic cartoons we love. Again, I really think that's a time and a place for a different review, really looking in depth of the Looney Tunes. But for the most part, I'm really excited to really get to review them. And it's going to be fun, because take it what it is. I love all the classics that everybody says is good, but at the same point in time, I like Space Jam. I like Looney Tunes back in action, so I don't, what that says about me, I don't know. But I know it's going to be fun reviewing this movie, so let's get into it, shall we? Our movie starts, as we do our synopsis for Bah Humduck, A Looney Tunes Christmas, on Christmas Eve. And Daffy Duck is the CEO and owner and greedy millionaire who runs the Lucky Duck department store. And of course, being that it's Christmas Eve, that means there's still a whole half day to run his employees ragged and get some extra bucks for those last-minute shoppers. And of course, being that it's Christmas Eve, he's so thankful to his workers that instead of making them come in on at 5 a.m. in the morning the next day, he makes them come at 6 a.m. in the morning on the next day, to get those return gift shoppers who just couldn't wait a whole day to return their gifts. But as such, his former friend and rival Sylvester visits him and tells him that he's going to be visited by 3 ghosts on the night. And as the story goes, he is, sure enough, with all the Looney Tunes insanity in plow, visited by 3 ghosts. And he eventually sees the error of his ways. He makes amends to change his ways with his employees. And from that day on, Daffy was known to keep Christmas in his heart better than anyone, as the old Christmas carol goes. This is Bah Humduck, A Looney Tunes Christmas. Let's get right back into it, as we always do, of course, starting with music. Now with music, not really much to say here, really combining sort of the classic holiday tunes with sort of the classic Looney Tunes melodies and such. The music was done by Gordon Goodwin. And by the way, I kind of made a mistake on this. I think I said 2009, it's 2006, my apologies, I had my notes wrong, which is why you should always double check your notes, but yeah, 2006 is when this came out. Music goes, again, nothing really impressive whatsoever. I mean, it works, don't get me wrong, and I didn't go into this thinking like there was going to be a soundtrack here I was going to want or expect. But they make it work. They have the classic sort of Looney Tunes tunes in there, along with sort of the melodies and sound effects, and all the classic stuff is there. Along with, you know, the things that make it feel like Christmas, the sort of the jingle bells, and no, I'm not talking about songs, I'm talking about the actual instrument, the bells, and the way they jingle, the certain way you make them jingle. It's a particular instrument, probably is just the bells, but there's a particular way the bells are present, where they're like, it's a stick, and fastened, and you shake it. It's kind of like a, I'm trying to think of the instrument, a maraca, I think it's called, you know, the sort of Latin American type of instrument that has like beans in it, thing you shake. You know, you make it in school when you're in elementary school and you shake it. Yeah, you go shake. In this case, it's instead of that, there's just a stick that has bells on it, and you shake the bells. As that sort of classic jingling sound, as if a horse with bells on it is trotting down the road. And that was a really long-winded way to get to that. But, you know, those sounds and those melodies are here. And, you know, again, it works. You know, at no point does either of the differentiating styles really impede on the other. There's the right amount of Christmas tunes here, the right amount of sort of Looney Tunes, sort of insanity within the music there. And it works. There's just nothing really spectacular here. Nothing, oh my god, mind-blowing. I didn't know it was here, and I can't believe it was here. That's really all I can sit there and say about the music. So overall, good. And works for the film. But if you're looking for something spectacular, you're not going to find it here. With that, let's move on to the animation. And this is probably the category I was having the most trouble with on multiple fronts. And of course, the first front was, you know, what do I think of the overall animation? Because to an extent, the overall animation, the sort of classic, sort of American, bold, bright style, I think, at the end of the day, it was definitely by 2006, and really by today's standards, is what should be considered, at the very least, be known as what a good animation looks like. Not great, not spectacular, incredible, and mind-blowing and all that, but the bare minimum of what should be considered good animation for our country. I'm not talking about France, I'm not talking about Korea, I'm not talking about Japan or anywhere else. I'm talking about America, though I'm sure a lot of it was made outside of America. But again, those bright colors, the bold line work, that really gives it that cartoony feel, but more of a modern edge to it. That, you know, I want to see in more cartoons. And I think the reason I say that is that I look at a lot of cartoons, especially cartoons on Cartoon Network, and yes, I'm talking about Adventure Time, Uncle Grandpa, or whatever the hell it's called, and all the other things that have come throughout the past 5-6 years, to where the art is very artsy, and there's a lot more soft colors and pastels. And again, not that I'm saying it's bad, but I think America needs to embrace that part of its animation style is bold line work and bright colors. It's something that's really missing, I think, in a lot of animation these days. There's, especially in the past couple of years, been this embracement of the use of pastel colors. Even more so, a great example, this is the Looney Tunes show of recent years on Cartoon Network. And I don't know. I guess it's just not for me. I look at this, I really enjoy sort of the bright colors, the bold line work, the really sort of modern edge of what should be at least the bare minimum of a good animation style. So I enjoy it, and I think it's really well done. And I think it's what I'm getting at. Character designs, here's a place where we're going to cheat. And I say cheat because rather than, again, like I said earlier, talk about each individual character design or the overall character designs, because I feel like I would be getting into a long-winded conversation that really has nothing to do with the movie, but more going into the history of the Looney Tunes and talking about the designs. I'm more going to talk about the sort of the design decisions as far as which characters they were in A Christmas Carol. So with that being said, starting off, Daffy Duck was perfect for Scrooge. And I think it's one of those, you can call it typecasting, call it whatever it is, it's one of those most obvious casting decisions. Which Looney Tune character would best play Scrooge? Everybody will say Daffy Duck. Even the people who like Daffy Duck will say Daffy. There probably would be one guy who would say someone else, because he wants to be a rebel, and that's when we kick the guy in the ass and throw him out in the snow and say, never come back to our club. But that's ever happened to me. But no, I would say Daffy Duck. I would expect a lot of people would say Daffy Duck. He was perfect to play Scrooge. Porky as the and I'm blanking on the name of the character, and I absolutely apologize. But the associate of Scrooge in the Christmas Carol story, the one whose son is Little Tom. I'm probably blanking on the names, and again, I apologize. It's dead of night, and I'm not feeling well. I don't have those names in front of me. Tiny Tim, I'm sorry. There they are. This is why I have the webpage up, folks, to help me in times like this. But yeah, Porky Pig was probably the best character to play the Bob Cratchit-like character. And of course, Priscilla, while not having a disability, definitely fit into Tiny Tim. And I really liked how she was played. Again, I'll get to her voice actress in a little bit. The surprise one was Sylvester, I'll say. Sylvester being the Sylvester the investor, basically playing Jacob Marley. That one fit to me, and I really enjoyed. Because it was one of those, like, where are you going to put Sylvester? Are you just going to make him a background character? Because there's a lot of times to where I think Sylvester doesn't get the respect he deserves as a character. Because I think he's one of the more iconic Looney Tunes characters, but he doesn't get the respect. And for the most part, I thought all the characters were greatly used. And I say that because they really delved deep into the sort of the classic Looney Tunes archives as far as pulling characters out. I mean, you had the well-knowns. You had Speedy Gonzales. You had Marvin the Martian. And I like him being the sort of this price... not price negotiator, but price changer, high-tech guy. Bugs Bunny being sort of... That's just the one I didn't work, because I didn't really... Bugs Bunny really didn't have a role. Bugs Bunny was sort of that guy who's just there. And, to provide slapstick comedy. And while I like it, and it's Bugs being Bugs, I think I would have liked him to be more of a general character. If anything, he's the guy who comes in looking for a donation. But the deep from, like, the chicken hawk, the California cougar, and no, I'm not talking about a woman. For all you young kids out there who don't know what I'm talking about, there's a sort of a yellowish lion, obviously based off California cougar. Just the name of... I'm blanking on her name. Well, AK Jr.'s in there, Henry Hawk, Barnyard Dog Jr., Barnyard Dog. And I'm like, this sort of a little chicken with a... I'm blanking on the thing, but the blue thing on her. There's a very famous Looney Tunes episode with her and Porky to where, she's the one chicken who can't lay an egg, and she finally lays an egg, and Porky... or they trick her with something in the mat to make her think she laid an egg. And then Porky takes it, but she's hard, so she hunts down the egg, and they get in a fight. Classic episode. I'm just blanking on the name of the character. You know, Foghorn Leghorn is in there. Different cats. Among many different... Just, they really went into the archive and pulled, like, oh my god, they remembered that character? I mean, really, that's what it was. And it does bring part of the enjoyment of this special is you can watch it, and I'm like, oh my god, I remember that character from that cartoon. They remembered that character? It was really good to watch. And I think I'll leave, as far as character designs are concerned, with the three ghosts. The Ghost of Christmas Past, I thought, was perfect with Tweety and, oh, wow, why am I blanking on this? I shouldn't be blanking on this. The Ghost of Christmas Past. Why is it never there when you need to find it? It's never there. Granny. Well, why am I... Again, it's Dead of Night. I apologize for my... incompetence. Yosemite Sam, I loved as the Ghost of Christmas Present. And again, I loved that they decided to go with that sort of classic look and who fits that? Yosemite Sam. The Tasmanian Devil, again, I also loved as the Ghost of Christmas Future. Again, for the most part, every character I thought fit their sort of role that they were put in for the Christmas Carol. The only one is, you know, Bugs Bunny, who was just a customer and was just Boyle, you know, comedy sort of bit for the play off of Daffy, or for Daffy to play off of him. I just think they could have done more with him, and that's why I don't like the decision there. Peter Puma, I'm sorry, I called the California Cougar. It's Peter Puma. I have the list up now. The Three Bears are in it. Sam the Sheepdog, Claudia the Cat, Charlie Dog, Miss Prissy, Mash and Tosh, Hippity Hoppeter, Beaky the Buzzard, which that was one of those things where it's like, oh my god, they've remembered Beaky the Buzzard. But yeah, really enjoyed the different sort of cast list. The comedy animation is the next point. And I really enjoyed the comedy animation. I thought it was done extremely well. The timing and the flow, because there is a timing and a flow to the animation when you're doing a slapstick, sort of Looney Tunes type of comedy. It may seem like easy, but you need to pick the right elements and the right sort of instruments of pain, per se. You know, you can't just have a scene where a safe falls on the head. There has to be something leading to the joke of a safe falling on the head to make the laugh work. For instance... Again, this is getting into the comedy, but, you know, there's a point where Daffy comes up through the toilet as he's journeying with the Ghost of Christmas Future, a.k.a. Yosemite Sam. He comes up through the toilet, Yosemite Sam's there to meet him. I'm like, that was disgusting. No, this is. Click. And he goes back down the toilet. There's a flow that any animation, for the most part, works. The twists and the turns and the conjunctions and everything works really, really well. I think last but not least are the backgrounds. And, you know, the special effects as well. And the special effects are good, really not noticeable. But it's the point. But it's also one of those things to really... the special effects were really non-existent and didn't really... feel important to, not necessarily that not important to talk about, but I guess good because you didn't recognize them, but again, special effects aren't, I think, as important as they are in sort of anime type of animation, because the shadows are more profound, and the shadows to the extent become more of a comedy flow and more character like themselves due to their conjunction with the sort of the comedy itself. So there's a lot more focus on things like dust and that stuff at the same point in time when you don't need to care about it. It's usually not cared about. But as far as the backgrounds are concerned, I really like the backgrounds. I love the set of and sort of the look of the Lucky Duck department store. I thought it was done really well. And again, really not too fancy with the backgrounds. Really just really in this main location of this really sort of but comical sort of satiric take on the huge department store. And when I say satired, I mean satired in a Looney Tune type of way of a department store. And I thought it was a really, really great set and point for the special to happen. So for the most part, I really did enjoy the animation. Overall, like I said, it at the very least, it's the bare minimum of what we should consider good for sort of American animation. But there's a lot of things that sort of make it classic Looney Tunes. So for that point, I've really enjoyed it. With that being said, I'm going to take a break. I'm going to play a couple commercials for you. And when we come back, we're going to get into acting and into story. After these messages, we'll be right back.
In the decade of the 1930s, even the great city of Cleveland, Ohio, was not spared the ravages of the Great Depression. In a time of fear and confusion, a character emerged that would entertain and inspire millions of children and adults alike. He began not as flesh and blood, but as a simple line drawing. His comic book adventures thrilled millions around the world. The magic of radio gave to his name a breathless signature and sound. Then with television came a whole new generation to idolize his exploits. In the 70s, the world believed a man could fly. In the 80s, he was reborn in the comics, and the 90s saw his death, rebirth, and marriage. In the 21st century, he returned to the big screen and saw his origin changed and retold on several occasions. Through the decades, he has gone by many names. The Man of Tomorrow. The Last Son of Krypton. The Man of Steel. His strength is incredible. His name is legendary. His battle is never ending. Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I host an internet radio show called Views from the Long Box. Superman is my favorite character of all time, and in 2013, he is turning 75. Because of this, a large portion of the episodes this year will be about the Man of Steel in a series I'm calling
Superman at 75, the celebration of a legend.
I'm going to mark Superman's birthday in fine style by examining all aspects of the character's history, from the comics, to the movies, to the television series, and beyond, both alone and with the best and brightest of the podcasting world. It may not be every episode, but the bulk of Views in 2013 will be all about the Man of Steel. He is the first and greatest superhero of them all, and he deserves no less.
Superman at 75. The celebration of a legend.
A series within a series, and the biggest birthday card a fan can give his favorite hero, only at Views from the Long Box. Views from the Long Box is a Fortress of Baileytude production. New episodes drop every other Tuesday over at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com, and for this series, over at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
I guess you weren't so tough after all, were you? Now it's time to send you to the next dimension.
291 original episodes.
This can't be. It's still going up!
325 manga chapters.
You act innocent, but you're deadly.
Time to die!
Dozens of characters, hundreds of enemies, and a whole lot of violence.
That kind of violence is pointless!
You see, Super Saiyans tend to be a bit violent.
Oh, crap!
Join hosts Donovan and Jesse as they cover the arrival of the Saiyans, the journey to Namek, the battle with Frieza, the mystery of the androids, and the terror of Majin Buu.
I lied when I said you could go. At least partially lied, for I will let you go to another dimension.
The Next Dimension, a Dragon Ball Z podcast. Join the fight at dbznextdimension.libsyn.com.
See ya.
Okay, let's get this show on the road, gang.
I'm Batman.
This looks like a job for Superman.
Monthly Mondays, available the third Monday of every month at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.
And welcome back, and let's get right back into it, of course, with acting. Now, with acting, before I go into the cast synopsis, the cast list, you know, again, I'm going to be sort of cheating, rather than talking about every character that, because there's actually a short sort of voice list here, and a lot of the actors play multiple characters. So with some of them, I'm going to be really just talking about, I think, the character they did the best, or one or two of the characters they did the best. So our cast list, Joe Alasky as a Daffy Ducks, Sylvester, Marvin the Martian, Foghorn Leghorn, Pepe Le Pew, Beaker Buzzard. We have Bob Bergen as Porky Pig, Tweety / one of the Ghosts of Christmas Past, and Speedy Gonzalez, the so-called most offensive Looney Tune ever by some people. The legendary Jim Cummings reprising his role as Taz / the Ghosts of Christmas Future, along with Gossamer. For those who don't know who Gossamer is, Gossamer's the giant furry red monster. It's like a parody of Frankenstein. Also, sometimes a monster made by Marvin the Martian. June Foray, reprising her role as Granny, another one of the Ghosts of Christmas Past. Maurice LaMarche, voices Yosemite Sam, / the Ghost of Christmas Present. Tara Strong, voices Priscilla Pig and the Housewife, which... that's how they have the character listed in the credits, which I think is a very confusing name for that character, because she's not a housewife, but the house mother, I think, maybe would have been a better term. She's the orphanage sort of mother That's in that one scene where you're in Ghost Christmas Past and, you know, Daffy's in the orphanage. And finally, last but not least, legendary Billy West as both Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd. So let's go over acting here. Let's start with Joe Alasky. Right off, Daffy Duck. Wonderful job. Everything just nailed Daffy in every conceivable way. It's like, this is Daffy. Just that sort of classic, iconic feel, as far as the voice is concerned, to who Daffy is. I just thought he did a wonderful job. One of the more closer aspects of actually capturing how sort of Mel Blanc did Daffy. Of course, Joe Alasky been doing Daffy since pretty much in 1990. You know, he started with Plucky Duck and Tiny Toons. So he's been doing Daffy Duck for, my God, let me look here. It's basically, you know, it says on, again, Wikipedia, which, you know, you take it as a grain of salt, as one of the success Mel Blanc's personating voices of, you know, multiple characters, including Daffy. I'm surprised they don't actually have a voice list for him. Usually when you look at these voice actors on Wikipedia, they have a voice list for you. They don't. But, you know, of course, all these years just nailed it. And then, of course, the other one was Marvin the Martian. And just because, you know, the classic Marvin the Martian voice, but he did this great job of making you feel for what the character's going through. You know, he's a supporting character, and he's shown as one of the characters that Daffy is abusing. You know, his whole thing of wanting to be home. And even though he only has very few lines and very few points of being shown through this special, you know, there is an emotional impact of, you know, feeling what Marvin the Martian is going through of missing home. So I thought that was a great job. Moving on to Bob Bergen, again, another voice actor that's been voicing, of course, the character I'm going to talk about here, Porky Pig. For a long time, he did it in Tiny Toon Adventure, Space Jam, Looney Tunes back in that. Again, and that's the great thing about this, is that they really brought an original cast back for the special. People who've been doing it for a long time, as opposed to... I really don't know what I have to... because a lot, they are still doing it. I don't know. In some specials, it just feels like they're different people. It's like the quality is not as there, but the quality was just absolutely here. Actually, it's interesting to see Bergen has doing the voice of Lupin the Third in certain dubs in the 80s and 90s, which I find absolutely amazing. Did a great job with Porky Pig. Absolutely wonderful. Again, just that character that's been abused, and just Porky's abuse of her, of him, just throughout, like, and you feel for him. Of course, playing the Bob Cratchit character. And just voicing Porky Pig as basically the Bob Cratchit character, he did a wonderful job. And just, again, capturing that essence that is Porky Pig. You then have Jim Cummings. What more needs to be said about Jim Cummings? Other than... He's one of those voice actors that if we were to build a Mount Rushmore of sort of modern-day voice actor, I mean, obviously Mel Blanc would be there. He, you know, Actually, I think the better way is if there was a Mount Olympus. I mean, Mount Rushmore, Mel Blanc, Scott McNeil, Steve Bloom, Jim Cummings. If it was a Mount Olympus, obviously Mel Blanc would be at the absolute top. He'd be Zeus. And then, like, the four, like, other big gods would be, like, Steve Bloom, Scott McNeil, Jim Cummings, and, why am I blanking on his name, and I hate it? Because he's done such good work, and I apologize on the last guy I'm blanking on. I've talked about that so-called voice actor pantheon there many times. And Jim Cummings reprising his role as Taz. I think started on Tasmania. And that's the thing I like about this, is Taz, as it goes to Christmas Future, was sort of the Taz of Tasmania. You know, because there's different ways to play Taz. You know, there's sort of the classic Taz. Sort of the real voiceless wonder. And then there's the Tasmania animation Taz. That's a little bit more understandable. And it's like, Jim Cummings is Taz. Yes! I love it. And it captures the core aspect of the character that makes it fun. June Foray, God Bless Her Heart, 2006. This was, she did this obviously when she was 89, maybe 88. She's, for those who don't know, I'm looking at it, she's now 96 years old. She's 3 years away from being 100 years old, and she's still going. My God. God bless her heart. And she is wonderful as Granny. Again, that, it's like, she's been playing Granny so long, it just captures the absolute aspect of it. So I thought she did a great job as Granny. great comedic timing. Maurice Lemieux as Yosemite Sam. But not just that he was Yosemite Sam, but that Yosemite Sam as the Ghost of Christmas Present just captured the essence of what made that sort of concept hilarious. And I love it. Tara Strong as Priscilla Pig is where she, you know, with the big role she did. And just, again, Tara Strong is, I think, a really underrated female actress. A female voice actress, for that matter. She's done so much, and everybody loves her, but I don't think people really appreciate her acting ability. And I think it's really centered here in Priscilla Pig, because you have to like Priscilla the Pig and sort of care for her, because, again, that's the sort of Tiny Tim character. That's the character that really changes Daffy around, and you have to believe in that sort of pureness of the soul from the character, and Tara captures it perfectly. Absolutely, a great job with it, because that's really the core aspect that really makes the story work. And then you have Billy West as Bugs Bunny. I thought he did a great job. I don't know how many times Billy West, of course, Billy West, better known for his stuff on Futurama as Dr. Zoidberg, Fry, Professor Farnsworth. Actually, looking at it, I'm amazed at how much stuff he's actually done. I thought he did a great job. I think he's been voicing Bugs Bunny for a bit now. It's not so much that he did a bad job. Again, I think the problem with Bugs Bunny in this special is just how they used him. I just don't think they used him enough. I think it's more of it. Like, they had him for a few bits here, like, oh, hey, we really have no place to put Bugs. Let's just put Bugs in the spot for comedy. And again, a missed opportunity, especially when, you know, as much as we love all the Looney Tunes characters, let's be honest, Bugs Bunny is the flagship character of the Looney Tunes. I mean, god damn it. Especially in the 90s, Warner Brothers pimped him out at the beginning of every movie. You know, it's Warner Brothers. Here's Bugs Bunny eating a carrot. Because that's the point. Not only is he the flagship iconic character of Looney Tunes, he's basically become one of the flagship iconic characters of the Warner Brothers Studios. So, they didn't do much with him, but Billy West did an absolute great job with the character. So with that, let's move on to story. Because again, voice acting just overall is great. And I think the point I'm trying to get here is they could have phoned this in. This is a 49-minute special that airs on Cartoon Network. They could have phoned this entire thing in. They didn't. And that's the point. They really cared about the acting here. And it really shows. Again, Andrea Romano did the voice acting. Directing here. And voice casting, for that matter. So, obviously, again, very rarely do I hear an Andrea Romano cast animated piece where the voice acting is horrible. Or just other crap. So, again, it really is the fact that they could have phoned it in, they didn't, and it was just wonderful. And it, again, made the story work. And like I said, we're moving on to story. Really only just two points to talk about here. Let's talk about... first point is really how this telling of the Christmas Carol differs from others. Because at the end of the day, this is a story that has been told, I think, over 100 times literally in entertainment in some form, whether it be a book, whether it be a play, whether it be a movie or a special. It's that iconic story of Christmas, that idea of hope and the ability that we can change who we are. How important it is to believe in each other and believe in something other than our own greed and our own wants, to remember the needs of others, and all the great aspect that makes the Christmas Carol classic. I think the thing I love about this sort of version that they decided to go with is that this is not the classic telling of A Christmas Carol. I mean, obviously they're in a department store, but what I mean by that is you feel the influence of Bill Murray's Scrooged, especially in Daffy. I really feel like the story was trying to channel Daffy as sort of very much like Bill Murray's Scrooge, because the Scrooge character here is very much like that, as opposed to sort of the more classic telling of Ebenezer Scrooge in the more classic tellings of A Christmas Carol. You know, in those classic ones, and you can see it with Michael Caine in A Muppet Christmas Carol, Patrick Stewart in the version, the TNT version of A Christmas Carol, Michael C. Scott, and again, pipping out my holiday special that I did with my good friend Spidey Dude, and Gerard, and Phantom, which is out now. You know, we talked about that. He may mention to the big original one. They all do this with Ebenezer Scrooge, to where it's this character to where he has a cold heart, but he knows he sort of sinned deep inside. And it's more of, as the ghosts come along, he's so trying to deny it, even because he knows he's done wrong, and he doesn't want to believe it. He's in denial of it, that he's done it, even though he knows he's done wrong. And it's just that final piece that pushes him over the edge, and makes him seize the error of his ways. And it's part of the greatness of the story. With the way that Bill Murray played sort of Ebenezer Scrooge in Scrooged, it was this guy that just utterly didn't care. He was an absolute asshole. That's what he was. There was no redeeming quality about him. It's just this. He was this great person early in life, but when things happened that made him believe that no, the world is screwed, to hell with the world, I don't care anymore. And it seems that he's not going to be redeemed. But then that last moment to where, you know, it seems like when he finally died, everybody else is happy, You know, he's gone. Everybody's enjoying it. He's gone. They're enjoying his riches. But there's that one person that misses him and cares for him. And that changes it around. It's the same thing here. You know, Daffy Duck is just an absolute asshole to everybody here. In a sort of cartoony, comical way that you'd expect Daffy to be an ass. You know, really, and again, also channeling that sort of classic idea of Disney, of Daffy, I mean. I'm trying to remember who said it, because somebody, I think it was Mel Blanc, who said the difference between Daffy and Bugs is that Bugs will always get it right and Daffy will always get it wrong. And I think you really do see it here. But just an absolute asshole to everyone. And, you know, as, again, the ghosts go along, it's like, you know, he's just like, yeah, what of it? You know, he's afraid of the ghost because, like, he's afraid of spirits. Who wouldn't be afraid of spirits? But he's not afraid. You're like, money, money, I got my money. It's that classic sort of Daffy aspect. Actually, it's no surprise I sort of channeled Bill Murray, because I'm waiting for them to make the Buddy Cop sort of Looney Tunes live action movie, like a Looney Tunes Back in Action. But instead, it's Bill Murray and Daffy Duck on a cop drama. Because that would be so well. They're just characters who are made for each other. But again, it is that aspect of it's, and he sees Priscilla, and Priscilla's sort of the one character that can pierce his heart. And it finally, it's that final aspect. Everybody's glad he's gone. Everybody's happy. But the only people who care is Porky and Priscilla. And again, showing, like, you know, as much as we hate what he did to us, you know, we understand that he's lonely and we care for him. You know, everybody needs somebody on Christmas. And that pierces his heart and he changes his way. So that's sort of that, more of that Scrooged type of aspect of the Christmas Carol, rather than doing the classic take, I thought was a wonderful choice. And perfect for the Looney Tunes style of storytelling as well. Which, again, when we're talking about the classic Looney Tunes style storytelling, it's comedy. It's classic comedy bits, satire, segments. The comedy here is, again, like I said, channeling the classic comedy of Looney Tunes. You know, I made mention of earlier of Yosemite Sam's bit of toilet humor, like, you know, Daffy Duck, he puts him in the sewer, comes up to the toilet, that was disgusting, no, this is flush. From that to, you know, Ghost of Christmas Past, that is Granny and Tweety, and they're just, like, clonking him on the head. which reminds me of something that, oh, God, I can't believe I'm blanking on their names, but the directors of Aladdin said, you know, when they were working on the film, and the animators were working on the film, there was this rule of, you know, when in doubt, hit the bird. I love saying that line, but yeah, just classic, just with these giant candy canes, it just all leads up to that one bit to where, like, there's nothing you can do to make me move. Clonk. It's just old school cartoon comedy, and we, look, understand, we don't get to see this anymore. We have to see this type of comedy that, you know, nothing against those who like Adventure Time or Regular Show or all these other new ones. It's not the same comedy. It's the weird, oh, this is funny because it's weird type of comedy that I don't personally get. I'm like, where's the punchline? Where's the thing that's going to make me go, ha, 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 ha? It's not there. I'm not getting it. It's that Ren and Stimpy name, that Ren and Stimpy, because while Ren and Stimpy was weird, there were comedy beats where you got the comedy beats. But it's more of that SpongeBob of, like, we're copying that, but there's no punchline, really. But yeah, you know, here it's that classic comedy, classic Looney Tunes comedy. You know, even to the point of having some classic bits in there. The whole hide me bit. And again, this is might sort of get frustrated, because as much as I love the bit, which I'm going to talk about in a second, it sometimes feels like they only brought Bugs in to do these sort of classic little bits here and there. And again, that whole, as I talked before, I wish they had a bigger presence with Bugs. But the whole, you know, oh my god, I've been visited by two ghosts, hide me, hide me. And Bugs, like, raises, like, yeah, we're going back this road, down this road again. Okay, how about here? Stuffs him in a washing machine, turns it on. No, no, that's not going to work. How about here? Jumps him in the TV. How about here? One of those bits that, like, along with, like, rabbit season, duck season, just classic Looney Tunes, and more importantly, comedy bits that I think are right up there with things like Who's On First, which, again, one of my favorite comedy bits of all time. So the comedy thread, just classic Looney Tunes comedy, the whole, don't be afraid to clunk him on the head with something heavy. Because it always works. It's just that mindless fun that I wish we had more of in today's animation. At least the sort of especially the cartoon comedy animation, but a lot more in comedy animation. I think there's a lot of animators out there that just don't understand the, you know, when in doubt, clonk them over the head with something heavy and hard. And then make a goofy face. It always works, and it's always fun. But so, for the most part, that's it. I think it's time for, you know, final thoughts here. At the end of the day, what makes this special work? You know, it's not the music, because the music is there, and it's okay, but there's nothing special, nothing mind-blowing. The animation, while good, again, nothing special, nothing mind-blowing. Modern, bold, line work, brightness. Characters are used very good. But again, like I said, the important aspect, the most important aspect, I should say, of any entertainment intellectual property, whether it be a book, a video game, a movie, television show, whatever, it's the story. The story works. Because they chose the right aspects that of the Christmas Carol and the right telling of the Christmas Carol that channeled the core aspects of the Looney Tunes characters, along with a voice cast that just put a tremendous effort and just did an absolutely wonderful job with the voice work. And you really felt the emotion and really felt they cared about the work they were doing. And just sort of bringing back sort of classic Looney Tunes comedy in the form of a holiday special. Because of that, you know, it's a really good holiday special. And I just tremendously enjoy watching it. It's fun. It's a fun 40 minutes. 40, 50 minutes. I think the total time it's 48, actually. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm watching classic Looney Tunes comedy in the form of a Christmas, classic Christmas story by voice actors who care, by a group of people who, like, chose the right sort of formula and vessel to portray the Looney Tunes characters in a Christmas Carol type of fashion. It's those type of choices that overcome the animation not being mind-blown. I mean, with that being said, in all actuality, because of that, you don't need the animation to be this mind-blowing show-stopping. Or you don't need the music to be mind-blowing. You know, as much as I go on and on about all of those things, and I do, because I think music, and animation for that matter, is so underrated about, you know, what it can do with certain design aspects and things like that. Along with voice work, for that matter. But as long as it's solid and you have great storytelling, you know, you don't need it to be mind blowing. You know, that's something. You know, that's one of the things in the new year I hope to sort of change is, you know, as try to focus more on talking about what makes the story work, because I think that's something. I'm not perfect as a reviewer, and I know it. You know, but I want to focus more on that, and I think this is a great example of where everything is Everything that makes this show work is the story. The story makes everything work. Especially when it has a great voice cast. So, at the end of the day, Bah Humduck, a Looney Tunes Christmas, gets a 4 out of 5 from me. It's a very good special. I really do suggest checking it out. It's probably one of the better modern holiday specials out there. And I say that because I've seen some of the more recent entries, you know, kind of like there's no really original good Christmas music of recent years. I don't think there's been a lot of good original sort of Christmas holiday specials, with the exception of a couple things like Muppet's Letters to Santa, this, among other things. Of course, a lot of that's because it's really crappy CG work. Again, I'm not going to get into CG. It's the holiday season. I want to be cheerful, so I'm not going to think about things that make me sad. So, that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. If you have any comments of any kind that you want to let me know about anything I said, remember there are several ways you can contact the show. You can contact the show by your email at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also contact us on our Facebook page by going to www.facebook.com/absolutionnetwork, or by going to facebook.com and searching for the Absolution Network. We're the one with the logo that's an A and an N in a circle. There's another network that's called Absolution Network. Obviously, we're the one that's talking about Toonami. They're not talking about Toonami. And, of course, you can always leave us a comment on the site itself that you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Of course, remember to check out all our other 132 Productions content. That, of course, includes the Otaku Momentum right here on the Absolution Network, the Shaft Plus podcast with Gene and Chris that you can find at www.shaftplus.com. My Tokyo SOS podcast, which we're in the process of getting the final review set up. It's going to be an epic review with lots of people. You can find that at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. Along with, of course, Comic Book Crazy and Heckcast on the Comic Book Crazy Podcasting Network, which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And of course, don't forget our friends on the sidebar of the site. A lot of them do so much great work, and as much as I sort of pimp the usual people I pimp, I want to pimp some other people. Of course, my friend Spidey Dude and the Clone Saga Chronicles podcast that you can find at SpideyDude.com. The DBZ Next Generation podcast that you can find at DBZ Next Generation at Libsyn.com. And a great Godzilla podcast that I want to pimp. Earth's Destruction Directive, which is on the 22 Freaks Podcasting Network. It's a great sort of Godzilla and giant monster themed podcast. Really worth checking out. And last but not least, I do want to point out a particular episode. I talked about Scott Gardner and the 22 Freaks Podcasting Network. He did a special on the Haunted Mansion that it's just an incredible podcast that really goes in depth in the Haunted Mansion and everything. And I really, really, I mean, I'm talking about the Haunted Mansion here at Christmas, but I got to listen to it recently. I really suggest checking it out. It's just absolutely incredible. It's instantly become one of my favorites. Check them all out. And that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Again, remember, later this week, I'm going to have another episode. Again, like I said, I apologize for things happening. Forced me to move back the release of this episode. But I'm going to have another episode out this week. And so later this week, I'm going to review a movie that I've seen a lot of. I've seen most of it. I've just not sat down and watched all of it. It's a movie that, when it came out, was a huge holiday hit. and really is sort of that work of that sort of CG style that Zemeckis was using in A Christmas Carol and other things like that. I'm talking about the new holiday classic, The Polar Express. So until next time, my Toonami generation, it's gonna get too dangerous. Stay golden.
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.